What's up, baddie bees? I'm Brianna, mom, wife, serial entrepreneur, and host of the Badass Basic Bitch podcast. Each week, I sit down with a seemingly ordinary woman who's doing extraordinary things, and I get to share her story with you. So let's go. Buckle up as we're going to get real and dive into the shit nobody talks about. Welcome to the Baddie Bee Club.
I wasn't like letting it go. And then it occurred to me, if you can't let it go, let it be. And I had so much more peace. I'm like, oh, I can just let it be. And so when we let it be, we just let our thinking be there. We don't have to try to stop it. We settle. So now I'm holding the snow globe. And when you set it down, we're designed to settle. And so I think feeling overwhelmed can be an invitation just to kind of surrender. Okay, I'm just going to let myself be.
Welcome back to another episode of Badass Basic Bitch. Today, we are joined by Lily Seiss, who transitioned from anxious school psychologist to peaceful three principles practitioner. Lily's passion lies in guiding others to uncover peace beneath anxious thoughts. And today, that's what we're going to be talking about, her journey and mission to bring clarity to those battling with anxiety. So Lily, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So before we get started, why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. Well, today I'm a mom. And for my job, I don't know what my title would be, anxiety coach, but really it's a well-being coach but primarily I work with people who are experiencing anxiety in a way that significantly impacts their life. And that can look like anxiety or OCD and panic attacks. And everybody that I work with wants to just live a more free life. And for a lot of people, they have found me through social media because I started sharing on social media about 3.5 years ago. And after I had recovered from pretty severe anxiety and panic and OCD. And so a lot of people identify with trying so many things and them not working and feeling really broken and kind of like, where do I go from here? And that was really my story. And so that is what I do today. I just love making content. And so a lot of people just say, oh, that was helpful. And I do it on social media or I do free masterclasses and I have a community. And then I see people one-on-one and I get to work with people all over the world. Right before I hopped on, someone's like, greetings from Germany. And there's people from Peru. So I think it's a really cool part. The fact that this shared human experience that sometimes we can get caught up and struggle. And I really like to share with people things that helped me and have helped like thousands of other people that I worked with. And before this, I was a school psychologist. So I've been working in a therapeutic counseling session, like setting for 17 years. And a lot of the same things that I talked about with kids, I mean, it's different, it's adult stuff, but say like intrusive thoughts or panic attacks or feelings of anxiety, or a lot of things that people are like, oh, I feel so comfortable telling you. That's something that I always heard, even as a teenager, my friends would be like, oh, I can tell you anything. And then definitely as a school psychologist, just kind of having like a relaxed, non-judgmental vibe, really listening and then providing kind of some simple clarity to help people feel better.
And why the transition? Because you said you were a school psychologist for 17 years. Was that right?
No, now I've been like in a mental health setting for 17 years.
Okay.
I transitioned. I'd been practicing as a school psychologist for about 12 years.
Wow.
And I did love it. And I just really was excited to work with adults too. I had been, before being a school psychologist, I was a nanny. Like the kids were in my wedding. I worked at, you know, I got a degree in early childhood education and worked at a preschool. And then I have my own kids. But I also, after I found something, I struggled for 7 years, like when my anxiety and panic with like a panic disorder. And so once I found something that really changed my life, I thought, why doesn't more people know about this? And I really wanted to share with other adults because I, being a school psychologist and I'd been in and out of therapy, like I did so much. And when I found out how simple it could be, I was like, why doesn't everybody know this? And I had always worked in person because this was before the pandemic. And I know people did virtual stuff, but I always thought if I was going to work with adults, it had to be in person, and how was I going to juggle that? being a mom. And at the time, I was the lead school psychologist in the district. So I had like interns and other psychologists under me. And then during the pandemic, so many people were virtual. And I thought, oh, I'm going to start a group. And so many more adults were on social media. And so I did that for the first year. Like I would run a group after work at 5 p.m. or I'd see people at 7 in the morning and then at 9 at night. And I just really fell in love with it. I also really fell in love with working from home. And so that's kind of why I transitioned. I did it for the first year and then I tried to do it for the second year, but it was really hard. Like I'm very lucky that my videos aren't really well, and so a lot of my both practices kind of got really full. And so I just transitioned to working with adults.
I love that. And I would love to have you tell us a little bit more, like, how do we define anxiety or when does anxiety become a problem? Because I feel like the term is used a lot and it's used really loosely. And I'm always kind of curious of like, I feel like you can be anxious at times, you can have anxiety, but is it a problem where we really have to address it? It's like, what is it? And when do we know to start to do something about it?
Yeah. Well, I think anytime anybody wants to talk with somebody and have more freedom and ease and be more in their life than in their head, that's great. Like nobody needs to wait until they would meet the criteria for generalized anxiety disorder or panic disorder or OCD. You know, so it's totally valid, even if someone just has a little bit of anxiety, because your anxiety is a normal emotion. And a lot of people might experience it, say, before they were maybe going to be on a podcast, or they were going to speak in public, or they were going to fly. And so sometimes it can just be situational, or, you know, sometimes even after a party, they might go over things in their head. But at any of those times, people can, as I said, say, oh, I'd like to even feel more confident, feel more trusting. But where I think it comes into a disorder is where it really, people are significantly more in their head than in their life. And it starts to, I think, impact their life, whether it could be traveling or driving or just like being present and connecting with their family. So there might be people who are still traveling and are still working and are still taking their kids to sports, but they're living in such a state of stress that they're not enjoying their life. They don't feel like they're connecting with their friends and their family. Or sometimes, you know, when we're in a state of stress, like a stress response, when there is actually not a real threat, it's just driving kids and going to meetings, people can experience physical symptoms. And so sometimes people can be, you know, just having like, you know, physical symptoms that can let them know, hey, maybe there's a different way to live. So I guess to answer your question, if it would be disorder, like they would meet the criteria, it would be like many more hours throughout the day and somehow impact their life negatively, whether it could be impacting their work or their socializing or their relationships or just their enjoyment of it, where people just are really, really in their heads, kind of going over things. I work with a lot of people and on paper, and that's how it was for me. I mean, well, I was at times I'm not unable to drive, but on paper, you know, or I could look like the picture of health, but in my head, I was really, really struggling.
So is it like when these feelings or thoughts or symptoms are preventing you from doing everyday things or participating in everyday situations where it's like preventing you from, you know, doing what is seemingly normal to do for other people? Is that the...
That could be one where it does prevent people from doing that, or people can be doing it, but they're doing it with such a huge amount of anxiety. So, or they feel like they have to like think about it and prep a lot. So I do work with a lot of people where they do hold down their jobs and they're married and they see their kids, but like they are so incredibly stressed and miserable and scared. And it's not a way that anybody has to live. So it can be both. I think this term's not really used anymore, but it would be like high functioning anxiety, you know? And so where those people, it's, their experience is still very valid, where anxiety can be showing up in a disordered way, meaning it's not just, oh, I got anxious before I led this meeting or this podcast and I didn't really do anything special and it fell away, you know, I think, or where it doesn't really take up much time. It doesn't really stop you from enjoying your life and feeling connected to people and feeling generally good physically and mentally, you know, because it can just like irritation or horror. Sometimes I'm sad, but it's like, so to me, that's where, but anybody can have times to, you don't have to wait until they're not functioning is what I'm saying. Like, hopefully that was.
Yeah. No, that's super helpful. I asked probably selfishly. I asked because I tend to debate this with my husband sometimes.
I have something to share that has made a real difference in my life and can do the same for yours. Did you know that we spend 90% of our time indoors and take around 20,000 breaths each day? That's a lot of air we're breathing in. And especially when, according to the EPA, it can be 2 to 5 times more polluted than air outside, and sometimes even up to 100 times worse. It's no wonder air pollution contributes to nearly 7 million premature deaths worldwide. So what can we do about it? I found a solution and I want to share it with you. The Air Doctor Air Purifier. This device has been getting a lot of attention by big names like CNN, Money, and ABC. And for good reason. It filters out 99.99% of harmful contaminants. I'm talking allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mole spurs, and even bacteria and viruses. And it has been changing my springtime allergies. Every March, like clockwork, that pollen and dust in our area go through the roof, and it is just a nightmare for me and my kids. But since I've had the Air Doctor in our home, this time of year has become so much more bearable. Breathing easier has literally changed my springtime experience. And because I think this could really help you too, I've got a special offer to share. When you go to airdoctorpro.com and use my promo code BBB, you get up to $300 off air purifiers. Plus, exclusively for podcast listeners, there's a bonus, a free 3-year warranty on any unit, adding an additional $84 value to your purchase, all with a 30-day breathe easy money back guarantee. So if you're not completely satisfied, you can return it, no questions asked, minus the shipping. So why not give it a try? Head over to airdoctorpro.com and use that promo code BBB. Trust me, your lungs will thank you.
I have like this sense of urgency for almost everything, but it's not crippling. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't stress me. I'm pretty chill about it, but I'm always like the now is better, now is easier type of person. Obviously, I'm not like, if something happened right now, I wouldn't pause the interview to go do it at all. Like if something popped up, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, someone just texted me, I have to go answer them. Like, it's not that. It's like an appropriate sense of urgency. And I'm in a bit of a debate because my husband's like, it's anxiety. Like, you have this anxiety. And I was like, it's anxiety because that's anxiety to you. But like, to me, I don't think about it. I don't stress about it. I'm not up at night. I sleep just fine. I wait. Like, it's just more of I prioritize things and I prioritize them based on senses of urgencies. And so I was just wondering, do other people have that feeling where like people might be terrified of public speaking, but then when they're done with it, they're like done with it. And then they're not like hyping on it and obsessing about it a week later on like, I wish I didn't cough during that period. Why did I cough? Like, I think I'm just trying to understand, is there a point where what you normalize or what you think is normal is starting to become a problem? And how do you identify that?
Well, yeah, sometimes it might be oblivious. And sometimes it might be, you know, if you're, say, for example, your husband pointed it out, and it doesn't have to be anxiety, it's just a word. But if he said that to you and he said it in a way that you could hear it with curiosity and you reflected and you realized, oh yeah, you know, sometimes my text might go off when we're in dinner and I'm thinking about that text and I'm not as present as I'd like in dinner. And I feel the sense of urgency, this pit in my stomach. Oh, isn't that interesting that just because it feels urgent doesn't mean that it is. Like, and so there's,
totally,
you know, there's a whole spectrum to me of you could realize, oh, wow. Cause I think I actually have that same sense. Like if I haven't written somebody back in an email or a text, like it is on my mind. And so sometimes I'm like, hey, like I can feel that energy if you haven't responded, and I can choose to either bring that energy to life or be like, it's totally fine for me to wait a day or whatever in certain cases. So to me in that, not to dismiss it, but like, oh, a kind of mild, totally okay thing. But, you know, one of my things many years ago, I don't know, I guess this would have been 12 years ago or something, or like I was in the middle of like orthorexia. So I had an unhealthy obsession with health, which started as so many things do out of love and this desire to keep people and ourselves we love safe. And so I had fallen into reading about like this paleo style of eating and clean eating. And I was also very mindful. I didn't have a son at this time because I also lost my period for 3 years because I was so obsessed with it. But I didn't want my daughter to eat certain foods because I had read that if we avoided these foods, she could avoid physical and mental illness. And there was one time that my parents did bring it up in a very loving kind of way. And because I was very mindful if I didn't want my daughter to get an eating disorder. So I was doing it. Also, she's 17. Everybody's fine. But... you know, sometimes somebody might bring it up to us just because you said, how do you know? Because sometimes like we are in it and we might be oblivious to, at first to, because sometimes we get caught up in it. We don't even know there's another way, whether we're-
Yeah, we normalize it. It feels normal to us to be like, oh, I got this bill in the mail. I'm going to pay it literally right now because I'm not going to wait. So I wait, I'll forget about it. You know, it's like we train, it's training ourselves to normalize. Yeah. That.
But to me, when you say that, there's no, I do the same thing. I have all my bills on auto pay, or if I get something, I want to do it right away. Cause if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. So to me, what you're saying seems totally fine. And you get to see, oh, does this negatively impact my life? If it's like, no, I'm great with this, you know, everybody can just do what's, that's like different perspective.
Yeah. Well, and I like that. It's like, is this negatively impacting my life? And in my case, let's say it got worse and worse and it started to negatively impact my relationship with my husband, where he's like, this, I feel like this is out of control. Like we can't go out. Then that's like the ding, you know, maybe it's time, which I like because I think sometimes with anxiety, because it is a normal feeling, sometimes it's hard to know when is this something that I have to address or take a little bit more seriously? And when is this just that normal feeling of anxiousness?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I think also we just get to live our own way. You know, and I know this is slightly, but I have a client who she reached every goal, not that we set goals too much, but she really was living in peace. She was so great. And she's going on a trip recently. And where she's at right now, she's not comfortable flying. But she has every other thing is like, she's really great. And so she has a work trip and she just realized, I'm not there and that's fine. And she said to her husband, like, so let's drive. And I'm like, cool. You know? And so for her, and our life doesn't have to make sense to anybody else, you know, for like, if, she, and so maybe she'll fly again or maybe not, you know? And I also think it's just really cool when we get to give ourselves permission, whether it's, hey, I pay every bill on time or, hey, I'm not flying right now. Like, you know, if people are like, oh, I feel really great in my life, my relationship's thriving, my work, my health is great. And I don't really like to drive or I don't really like to fly or I'm a homebody. And like there's so many ways to live a life and be at peace with living life. And it just has to make sense to us and those around us or like us and having the relationships we want.
Yeah, right. That's the second part is very important too. And so I'm curious, like, I think your take is a little bit different from more traditional, you know, psychology therapies that's using to treat anxiety. Something that you mentioned a lot and focus on is something called the three principles. I would love for you to dive into that and talk a little bit more about like, what is it? Why is it different or how is it different? And just giving us an overview.
Yeah. Well, the three principles are happening, whether we know about them or not, just like gravity, you know, and so, but having an understanding of them can really be extremely helpful, just as if an electrician would understand all the ways electricity, like electrical wiring works, like they're not going to get hurt. Like I'm not going to go into the wiring because I don't understand it. So having an understanding of the way we work as human beings. And so the three principles were founded in the 1970s by Sydney Banks. But what he talks about, other people have talked about, like spiritual people and philosophers and theosophers, but he put them in a way that to me are the most understandable and the simplest truthful way. And so one is that we're all alive and there's this kind of greater intelligence, which I think we all can agree on, this cool way that we come kind of from nothing into something. And this is this innate intelligence that's behind, that grows, that helps us grow into babies and humans and helps or allows the planets to be here and seasons and zebras and chameleons. Like we can understand, oh yeah, there's this larger intelligence in here going on, something behind our brain that's powering our brain. And, you know, why learning about this made such a difference for me. And I think a lot of the people that I work with is, we can get so used to listening to our thoughts, and that's, they're often produced by our brain, which is always sharing its opinion and narrating our experience and kind of using our intellect can be really, really helpful. But it's not always helpful when it comes to like mental and physical health, because our brain like is just chatting and sometimes is going to worry and exaggerate. And for me, I try to use my intellect and my thinking to like think my way to well-being. And that can often just kind of keep us in the stress response. And so I was like, okay, let me think. And how am I going to prevent this panic attack? And blah, blah, blah. You know, I just had so much more thinking. And so why it kind of differs, trying to say this in the most concise way, because I had done a lot of like traditional therapy and also spirituality, but like it had never been explained in this simple way. That's like, oh, wait, there's something beyond your thinking that all of my, which often happens after a panic attack is people become like, they have like panic about panic and anxiety about, you know, and they think and scan their body and think it makes sense. Like I need to now even take this more seriously and think even more. And learning about this innate intelligence, this thing that's behind our brain, it was like, oh, this, you know, when, if something happens and you don't think about it, but you spring into action, like you didn't actually think about it. And like seeing something about the principles, how it is like when you have insights, it changes you from the inside out. Like you see something in this different way. It moves beyond knowing it, just knowing it in your head, to knowing it deeply. So that's one thing. And we could talk so much more about that. But it was like, oh, I started to see how this wisdom and common sense that's in me got me through every panic attack. Like, especially that first one where I had no idea. And so I started to like see that there was something beyond my thinking and get curious about that. And so that's kind of what in the three principles would be called like universal mind, this universal intelligence, this thing that's always there that can't be broken. And then also one of the principles is about thought, where we're always living in the feeling of our thinking, you know? And so we have a thought, and if say it was, you know, if you texted your husband and he didn't text you back like in an hour, and normally he does, you might have the thought, blah, 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 something bad. And then this would kind of bring in the third principle of consciousness, where consciousness gives us a really full experience of our thinking, whether it's true or not. And so when we have a thought, it's not just like a black and white thought, like we feel it with our senses. So having an understanding of that, but also with thought, that thought just comes and goes. That's the nature of thought, you know, and I didn't know this because I worked very hard to like have new thoughts, whether it was like with emotional freedom technique and tapping and writing down my thoughts and ripping them up or doing yoga poses, or like I thought there was so much more for me to do. So with the three principles understanding really like showed me how beautifully humans are designed and how there's actually less for us to do, kind of bringing in understanding the nature of thoughts, that when we understand thoughts, that just because we have a thought doesn't mean it's true. And kind of the neutrality about thoughts, how they're just coming and they come and go. And so it's okay for any thought to pop in. You know, I work with a lot of clients who have had intrusive thoughts, like an unwanted thought, which is what I had too. So it was like, drive over this overpass. And to see that that thought can just pop up because it's the opposite of what you want to do. And you don't actually have to do anything. Just understanding thoughts allows that thought to come up and then just to go, because that's how we're designed. You know, that's why when you go into a room sometimes and you're like, why did I come in here? Because a thought flew out of your head. And so you have to wait a minute. And so seeing how these principles were playing out, I just saw something in such a different level. And for me, I really needed to do less. Like I had a very long morning routine, a very long night routine. I was thinking all the time and being on guard and, you know, doing, I had done neurofeedback and somatic therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy and had a like perfect morning routine and night routine. And all of that can be totally like good separately. But when done so much, it's like I was so in my head and I was just really kind of over innocently overcomplicating well-being.
Really interesting.
I think the three principles really just having this understanding was like, I just saw one, my own innocence. I saw it without judgment because I learned one, just how sometimes so many humans can innocently overcomplicate well-being. And I saw very clearly what I was doing, why that was keeping me in this chronically anxious and panicky state, and how it was safe to do less. And if I did less, like, oh, wait, maybe I don't have to be on guard. I don't have to scan. I don't have to work so hard to have new thoughts and to return to balance. Because a big part of it is we have innate health. We return to balance. This is how we're designed. So it really helped me get out of my own way and really settle and get out of a stress response rather than, and like just that our brains are designed to rewire themselves. And not, I didn't need to do Joe Dispenza's, also not knocking him, but I'd wake up and I'm like, I'm going to listen to this hour a day. I'm going to rewire my brain. And like, I was working so hard, but what I was doing was just stressing out my mind and body. And so perfect thing for me, because as like an overachiever, perfectionist, there was less for me to do. And we're designed so beautifully. We're designed to come back into balance. You know, we have an inbuilt healing system. Our mind and our body does, just like a doctor doesn't heal a broken bone. We don't need to work so hard to kind of heal from it if we get out of our own way. And so that's really what the three principles understanding did for me. And really like allowed me to see my own innate health and see that there was less for me to do. And by doing less, it was just crazy how much better I felt after struggling severely and feeling like the more I did, like the worse I felt also, because I was like, what does this mean? Why am I so broken? And kind of being a school psychologist and doing so much therapy, I was like, and that's, I think a lot of people identify that because I work with a lot of people who are also like high achievers and perfectionists and are like go-getters and they've changed their diet. They're not drinking alcohol. They're not drinking caffeine. They're meditating. They're in therapy. And they're like, wait, why aren't I feeling better? So.
Yeah, I like that. So the principles really emphasize that our experience of life is created from within through the interaction of mind, consciousness, and thought. Is that the whole thing? And mind really represents the whole source of, you know, life. Consciousness allows you to acknowledge and be aware of those experiences, thoughts, etc. And then thought really allows you to dictate our perception or reality and responses to the world, but also acknowledge that these are transient and can come and go as we want. Is that about right?
Yeah, definitely. I think you did a really great job, because also like thought is such a gift. Like it's a gift when we have a thought and we can think of our memories, or we can be excited for our future, we can create. And sometimes people just innocently misuse the gift of thought, you know, where we give so much more weight to these catastrophic, scary, worried thought, and we believe these thoughts. And just, yeah, you did it. Yeah, that's definitely it. And just kind of seeing those can help us kind of to our starting point. We're sure you might still have an anxious thought or a worried thought or an urgent. It's not like when you learn the principles, you're just, your thoughts are going to be happy 100% of the time and like positive 100. It's like, hey, you're just going to be a human at peace with life with all types of thoughts, but you're going to get to leave the thoughts that wish you well, you know? And even if I forgot to pay that bill, I'm going to do it right now. Like, you know what? I've had this sore throat for a week. strep is going around. Like, it's not like your thoughts are going to be like, you're perfectly fine. But, you know, it's going to have a different feeling. So a lot of it is also letting your feelings be your guide, because the feeling tells you how clear your thinking is. And knowing that is incredibly helpful. Like, you know, because if you sometimes feel all really like worked up, your thinking's not going to be so clear. But that's just what happens to everybody. And that's why a lot of people already know this. The principles are very basic in a great way. But sometimes people get really thrown off and they forget this, just this basic common sense. Like, if you're really angry and worked up, most people are like, I am not going to send this email. You know, they're like, I need to wait an hour. Or if it's like 1 a.m. and you get something, you're like, I'm going to wait till the morning. Because consciousness can relate to our state of mind, where sometimes we're in this like anxious, insecure, or really angry state of mind. And we know, I'm not really thinking clearly. Let me just wait a little. Let me sleep on it. And then our consciousness changes and the situation doesn't change, but our state of mind does. And we can see, oh, I'm in a clearer state of mind. This is when I can trust my thinking more. And so it's just, you start to see, it's not a problem if you feel anxious or insecure or angry, but you just kind of wait a minute to have feeling that feels more clear. And then we can just most of the time kind of like live from a place and we have like less regrets, less stress. And it just is, to me, it's very helpful to have that. And I didn't know that. I thought if I felt really anxious, it kind of was like, oh, my thinking is on track.
Yeah. Something that I've been practicing with my kids, because growing up, and I think a lot of people the same similar ages to me will can relate to this, is like growing up, when we had certain feelings, they were dismissed or told to put them away. At least for me, that was very common, of like, I don't have time for this feeling. You need to just, we're moving and you need to just come with us, or you're left behind, type of thing. And so something I've been practicing with my kids, and have been doing it with myself too, because I've been coaching them through it. And I'm like, actually, this is a really great idea. I should do it for myself. Is as kids have these thoughts, we teach them to acknowledge them and sit with them and feel them, but say, this is going to pass, but right now we need to acknowledge it and really understand how you're feeling. And it doesn't matter if you're so upset, if you're so sad, if you're any of those things, like recognize that feeling and allow it to, you know, give it the space that it deserves. And then you'll start to notice, as you recognize it, that it starts to go away. And then it allows you to question, well, why was I so angry? Oh, it wasn't about my sister taking my toy. It was actually because of these other reasons. And that's really been working for us. I would love to hear from you on using these types of principles. What can people do when they're feeling overwhelmed by those thoughts? That was one example, but I would love to hear from you other ideas.
Well, I really love everything that you said, because some things that I heard in there is when we just allow ourselves to be, like, you know, because I think a lot of people, when, just since we're talking about anxiety, they resist it. It's like, no, I don't want to feel anxious. And then it lasts so much longer rather than, mm-hmm. and whatever reason, because no, I don't want to feel anxious. I can't feel anxious on the podcast or at work or with my kids. And so it's like, no. And it resists. And I'm sure you've heard that what we resist persists. But when so people see, oh, I can just be anxious without resisting it, they're surprised at how tolerable it is and how fast it flows. And then to your point, when it flows, then if there's something to reflect on, it's there. They're like, oh, so they can let themselves be angry. But you can see, well, you're angry, like, you know, and it's such so great that you're having these conversations with your kids. It's okay to be angry. But you might be, it's not okay to hit your sister or to yell at everybody when you're angry. Here's what we can do when you're angry, blah, blah. And then you see the anger passes and then their head clears, you know? And then, so if they're angry, it wouldn't be the time to think, why am I angry? You know, just if someone's anxious, they don't have to think, why am I anxious? It's not okay to be anxious. I think a lot of times people don't let themselves just be a human and be like, oh, wait, you know, I'm okay to have all human experiences. Afterwards, that's when there's clarity. And so, and sometimes somebody doesn't need to know why. You know, sometimes it just makes sense. It's like, oh, well, before every podcast, I get nervous and that's okay. But I don't, you know, we can just know, oh, my heart was really in it. Or, but so you said it, what do people do if they feel overwhelmed? Well, I think when somebody feels overwhelm or tension or stress or any form of upset, it really is an invitation to just let ourselves be and to let our thinking be. You know, we don't have to let our thinking go, because sometimes I think people think, oh, I want my thinking to flow. But you can just let it be there. I think sometimes what I know I've done or my clients have done, because this thinking seems invisible. So say they feel overwhelmed. They think, why? Is it because I had a glass of wine last night? You know, is it because maybe I ate some sugar? Or what did I do wrong? Like what? And so they use that feeling of overwhelm to add more thinking, because they think, if I figure it out, I'm never going to feel overwhelmed by this anxiousness or this angry, rather than, okay, I know that, you know, I use this snow globe a lot. So if you knowing one, all humans get shaken up, kids get shaken up all the time, but this is the time just to, well, the people are listening, you're not seeing me, but I'm shaking a snow globe and then all this noise is going around. But if you see that as an invitation, oh, I'm just going to let it be. Because I remember there was something a couple months ago that I was just kind of ruminating about. I wasn't like letting it go. And then it occurred to me, if you can't let it go, let it be. And I had so much more peace. I'm like, oh, I can just let it be. And so when we let it be, we just let our thinking be there. We don't have to try to stop it. We settle. So now I'm holding the snow globe. And when you set it down, we're designed to settle. And so I think feeling overwhelmed can be an invitation just to kind of surrender. Okay, I'm just going to let myself be. And, you know, and a lot of people talk about acceptance. And I think, so accepting that's how you're feeling with the understanding. Because I think to me, understanding is a key piece of acceptance. Because when you understand, oh, everybody gets shaken up. Everybody can have a whole flood of thinking. And understand that thinking flows and we're designed to come back into balance, that something that's uncomfortable isn't unsafe. And I think I've seen it again and again, like thousands of times, of how when people don't resist their experience, it's not as intense and it flows so much faster. Like if people are like, oh, okay, well, it's okay if I'm anxious. It doesn't seem like front page news, or even when they start to see, oh, this is panic. See it kind of as an invitation to like just settle in and allow it to be there. And but when people can understand it, they're just not as scared of it. And it just is, it's just, I think it's such a crazy cool thing of when you don't resist it and you just let yourself have that experience. You're like, I can't believe how fine that was or how short it was. Even anger or even sadness. You know, I've had some of my mentors, one who said, okay, he's feeling really depressed. And he said, this is it. I'm going to be depressed now. I'm going to get under the covers. And he didn't, he let himself do it. And then within 15 minutes, he was like, okay, I'm feeling better. And I'm not trying to minimize depression, but I think oftentimes people think if I start crying, I'm never going to stop. If I'm anxious, it's never going to stop. If I'm angry, it's never going to stop. And actually it's so much more temporary, because it's the resistance of it and the thinking that we add on to it that makes it last so much longer.
Yeah. So when I was younger, I had an eating disorder for like, geez, over a decade. And I had really bad anxiety. Typically when you have eating disorders, anxiety partners with one another. A really cool trick that I learned in my 20s when my anxiety was really bad was to limit my sensory receptors. So if I'm feeling really anxious, because like really no matter where you are, what you can do is you can find a place where you're touching nothing except for the floor, where the lights are off, where you can plug your ears, where you can close your eyes, or you can, you know, not smell anything, not eat anything.
and just sit there and like allow yourself to have whatever feeling you're having, allow yourself all of the thoughts. But what ended up, what would always end up happening for me is eventually, because all of my other sensory receptors were neutralized, my thoughts could then just process. And then I got over whatever I was having so much faster than if I was in a bright room with a bunch of stuff around, with people around, with food around, with smells around. It was like everything would just trigger and pile up on one another. So that was like my trick that I've also taught my kids, like you said, go under the covers. I'm like, you can always find a dark space with no noise. Just find it and then just sit there and freak out if you want to freak out. It doesn't matter. You'll realize faster because you're only focused on your thought, that you can calm yourself down a lot quicker. It just always worked for me.
Yeah. And that's so cool. And I think it's really cool when we find things that work for us. And, but we can also see too that, you know, that feeling that you were looking for can be, okay, that's my preferred thing. But what the feeling is letting go of thought and is settling and seeing, oh, wait, that's available. Even if I'm in the middle seat on an airplane, because it's this feeling of holding on tight. And then what the feeling that we're looking for is we can like take a sigh and let go. And I think of knowing, because I work with a lot of people who want to like be out in the world more than they are. And so sometimes they want to go home. And so knowing, it might be, when I get home or I'm in a dark room, but it's really also powerful to see that feeling is available even in the supermarket, that it is, but sometimes everything is totally valid too. And it's super cool to see how we're designed to return to balance and how we do settle. And I love this, like, oh, you can freak out, because it feels empowering to realize, oh, like this felt overwhelming and then it didn't. And people can bank that experience and know, yeah, I returned to balance, dark, and it's totally valid. I can leave this party. I can leave the supermarket, or I can just get curious and see. To me, it's like, and I think I do something where I soften and I think like, but what I did when I was really struggling, if I'd hear people, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to do that too. But then I would go in my head about it and I would try to do what worked for somebody else. rather than it's like kind of the principles of letting go of thought, of softening, of like, and so I always tell people, I don't know, to kind of go back to the basics, and it doesn't have to look any certain way, because then if people are like, oh, I'm in the dark, is it working? Or I'm softening. And I never want people to do like what I'm doing, but to learn for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you're coaching people, what are some of the worries or misconceptions with these practices that you hear a lot?
With the principles practices?
Yeah. Or in general.
Well, I think one thing that people see through working with me, or just things I share, is actually how there's less for them to do. So I think sometimes a misconception is it's going to be hard work, and how bad they feel, it's going to be even harder and longer. Or like that they have to get to the bottom of it and they have to know why. And so I think sometimes that's a misconception, and people see it in a really cool way. Like, wow, there is less work for me to do that. And then I think people also then find a healthy relationship again with, say, yoga or meditation, but sometimes they think, I have to do these things. And it's the spirit that they're doing them in, one of, oh my gosh, maybe some, like, I'm different. Something's wrong with me. I'm broken. I'm not someone who can just get up and drive the car. I need to meditate for an hour. So I think some of the misconception is that, one, that it's more complicated, or sometimes people think they're stuck with it. Cause I think sometimes people say, you're always going to have OCD and you can never get rid of it, or you're always going to have an anxiety disorder. And that's just not something I believe, or that I was taught through my mentors who are psychologists and psychiatrists and in their 80s and have worked with all people, like that everybody's sitting in the middle of mental health. And it doesn't mean that you go back and you're just a person who's like happy with rainbow thoughts 24/7, like, oh, we can all just be, because sure, I have sometimes anxious thoughts. I don't even really register them because I don't resist my experience as much, but like I have moods, everybody does. So that's one thing. I think it's the hard work thing. too. But a really big one, I think I always thought I was just going to be an anxious person. I thought this is who I am. And I'm less anxious than I was as a child. Like, I'm much more peaceful. I'm less in my head. I'm way less worried than I was as a child. So those are kind of, I think, two things that I think are the biggest. People see how simple it is. And then also, I think sometimes people, when they're struggling so much, they think, I want to get something and I never feel anxious again. And then they start to realize, like, oh, well, actually, I'm okay. Like, if it's just a normal human emotion, or even somebody said something, well, about physical symptoms. I had a client, and then she said, well, physical symptoms, you know, because sometimes people have uncomfortable physical symptoms. And sometimes they think, I can't come to peace with these. And then I had a client who had a super cool insight, because she realized that when she exercises, she's like, oh, I have physical symptoms. But like, because she's like, she thinks they're expected and they're not a big deal. And so, or also sometimes I think people think, well, you can't if you have a health condition, or what about this? And that there's exceptions for them to have peace. And there's really not. I'm not saying that you don't have compassion or maybe more things to think about, but there's really peace is available, and insights and good feelings and innate health for everybody. And so I think the community that I'm in the three principles, is just such a, or even with trauma, you know, trauma isn't one of my specialties, but I definitely have, also everyone does have some trauma though, and anxiety and panic and just being a human. But, you know, one misconception too, I think sometimes people think, well, how can I've been through so much, you know, and being in the three principles community, it's just like an incredibly inspiring, hopeful place. Like, you know, one of my colleagues is in Israel in a war zone, and she's living in a beautiful feeling still, not, you know, still acknowledging everything that's going on. It doesn't mean that she didn't get scared at some points, but, and I just had a woman on my podcast, Stories of Hope, who had stage 4 cancer, and then even then was in a, you know, a good feeling. And I'm not being like, oh, everyone just has to be happy, even in war with cancer, like not at all, but just that, it's just an incredibly hopeful conversation that nobody's broken. And nobody is stuck, because there's always hope, because there's always help.
Love that. And what would be one piece of advice that you would want anyone listening to take away from today's episode?
Well, if you don't feel good, you know, if you are feeling upset or tense or stressed, to really take your thinking with a grain of salt, and more of the time kind of be open to believing the thoughts that wish you well. You know, and seeing that all human beings go up and down, but when we're down, one, we didn't do anything wrong, but that's not the time to have more thinking or to take your thinking serious, because it's going to be so much more helpful, clear, and true when you're in a good feeling. Even if it's like, all right, I got a funky morning, you know, you might have a bunch of thoughts like, oh, da da da, you know, so that was, I just really would love people to know that they're not alone, that they're not stuck with any experience they have. And if they are feeling overwhelmed or anxious, and they think there's something wrong with them, or that other people have it more together, it's really not true. And so really to believe their thinking when it wishes them well, because that's going to be much, much truer. and so that's, I think, a really big thing that I would want people to know, is if you feel bad, don't pay attention to your thinking, unless it's kind of a hopeful thinking. Wait a minute, because your thinking, or thinking clears. It really does.
Yeah, I like that. And where can people find you if they want to continue the conversation or follow you on Instagram? Where are the best places?
Yeah, on Instagram, I'm at and then _ peace from within. And that's a great place. I have so many videos. I love making videos. So, I mean, my second thing would be, if you are feeling anxious or overwhelmed or alone, check out my Instagram, because I almost have like 3,000 videos. I answer questions all the time. So I have so many videos there. And then, you know, that's a really great place, because most of my links are there. I have 2 podcasts. I do one with my colleague, and then I have a podcast that's just Stories of Hope. So I think I have like 11 episodes. So people that have experienced pretty severe anxiety, panic, and OCD, and kind of are on the other side. So if people are wanting to feel less alone and feel inspired, I have people that share about their, whether it's like sleep anxiety, some insomnia, intrusive thoughts, derealization and depersonalization is a big thing, because that was what I experienced. there's a lot of stories regarding that. I do have a colleague who talked about her experience with depression, another colleague with her experience with stage 4 cancer. And so, but they're very hopeful stories. So that's where people can find out more about me.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Lily. I really appreciated the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
As always, thank you for listening. Check us out on Instagram at @badassbasicbitch. And thank you to Saw and Sign, our production studio. We'll see you next week.